Welcome to this week's episode of The Art of Authenticity. I'm Laura Coe, your host, and thank you guys once again for joining us. We have Elizabeth D'Alto today. She is the CEO and host of the very popular Untame the Wild Soul podcast. I had the opportunity of coming on. She is just a total blast, had a great time, but also deeply thoughtful and had incredible questions and insights. She came on our show. She delivered the same level of real, grounded, honest, raw, connected advice and thoughts about her own experiences and what she understands about how to untame yourself, how to bring yourself forward and really lead from that deeper self. She's on a mission to build community, curate events and content so that you can have a relationship with yourself that's wild and passionate and full-bodied, because in the end of the day, that's what it's all about. So check out the Wild Soul Movement. Check out her podcast, the Untame the Wild Soul. She has a book about untaming. It's all about letting it free, opening up, surrendering, releasing, trusting, receiving. We go into it in today's episode. Hope you enjoy it. Thanks again for tuning in. Hey, welcome to this week's episode of The Art of Authenticity. I'm here with Elizabeth D'Alto. Hey, Elizabeth.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I love it. This is round two.
I didn't have my mic in front of my mouth. Now I do. Hi.
You sound, it actually sounds beautiful. So it's a marked difference. I'm so excited to do this. I went on her show. If you guys haven't checked it out, I'll put a link on my site, but amazing podcast filled with tons of great guests. But I had such a great time. We chatted and such a fun conversation. So we're doing a repeat. So for you guys who haven't checked her out yet, Elizabeth does all this great work with getting into your bodies, into your intuition, deeper into yourself to get out of your head. And she even has this cool 9-minute daily way to start your day. And I was thinking, if you wouldn't mind, a great way to kick off this podcast would be, could you take us through this awesome daily ritual for a minute or two and just walk us through what you suggest people do to start their day? And for everybody out there that's listening, like maybe this is a nice way to dial into this podcast.
Oh, I love it. So the way it's 9 minutes, because it's 2 minutes of just breathing, of just being with yourself. And then it's 3 minutes of moving. And my way of moving is like sensual movement. And then the 4 minutes is actually journaling what's good and what I want. So I'm a firm believer that if we're going to expand into more, if we're going to receive more, we have to also be like really appreciative and really noticing and aware of like what's actually already awesome. Because I feel like we're very much wired to be looking at what's not good, what's lacking, what do I not have, what's the distance between me and where I want to be, instead of being like, damn, I got some stuff going on right now that is already fantastic. It's just like a better energy. So I'll do an abbreviated version because I don't want to bore people. But and by the way, if they want it, they can grab it at wildsoulmovement.com/ritual. We have an audio and a video that they get to go along with it, as well as a written explanation.
Yeah, guys, I grabbed it myself and I listened to it and it's awesome. Yeah. So if you could maybe do like a 30-second breathing, a little movement, just do like a little abbreviated. I did it this morning. I was like, this is nice.
Oh, I'm so glad. And the thing is, anyone has 9 minutes. I feel like you probably get this too. We live in a complex world, and I think people are very busy because of that often. So yeah. So, you know, obviously I know I have a podcast, so I know some of you might be driving your car. So don't do this. Don't close your eyes if you're driving. Not that I needed to tell you that, but you know, wherever you are, depending, you know, modify according to what you could do. But I would suggest if you can close your eyes to close your eyes and then just start to simply notice that you breathe, like that you have breath that's coming in and out. Don't do anything to manipulate it or change it, but just like notice first that you're breathing. And pay attention to the sensations of breathing. So what does it feel like as you inhale? Maybe notice your throat opening, your heart opens. You can deepen. You could let your belly relax instead of holding in your belly like so many of us do, right? Squeezing into whatever the hell we're wearing any given day. So take a deep breath. Let your belly relax as you inhale. And then as you exhale, let your belly fall. And just notice how good it feels to be in a body, to have sensations to connect with, that you can nourish yourself through your breath, that you can get present through your breath. That this whole magnificent meat suit exists below your neck. Another big inhale. This time maybe a little bit deeper. Slower. and an exhale. And you could exhale out loud if you can, if you're somewhere where you could do that without seeming like a total weirdo. Maybe you're in line at Starbucks with your earbuds and you're like, ah, and people are like, what is that person doing? You know, I always like to imagine scenarios. Okay. And then as you're relaxing, I just want you to just roll your shoulders back again, just very subtly. It doesn't have to be big, but if you want to take up some space with it, go for it. Like whatever your body would feel best in your own body. So just start to roll your shoulders back, but gently. This isn't fierce movement. It's meant to be nourishing. And then you can start to roll your shoulders forward. And again, you can keep your eyes open or you can close them if you're in a place where that is conducive to the environment.
I'm doing this with you guys, so totally in.
And then I want you to just nod your head very slowly. Nod your head yes, creating some space between the vertebrae and your neck as your chin reaches down. And then really reaching up and getting some length in your neck. Go back and forth and then shake your head no. Again, slowly, maybe so slow that it's a little uncomfortable, like you're, I don't mean physically uncomfortable. I mean uncomfortable, like you're annoyed and you want me to move faster, but I'm not gonna. And then just last one, at least circle your hips a couple times. So whether you're sitting, and I know this is possible sitting because I do it in my car all the time. Just circle your hips and again, slowly. So the point of this movement is to connect with your body and just spend some time in and with your body and then circle your hips the other way. We do a lot of things in our life in a linear fashion from the way we follow rules and instructions. We compete. We try to advance up the ladder. Even those who work out at a gym, a lot of linear movements. So just some non-linear movement switches things up a little bit, gets you into your right brain. Good. So one more deep breath. Let it go. Make a weird noise if you want. And then just take a moment to notice like that you're more with yourself. You're more present. You're more here. And then Laura, let's do this since we're in a live conversation. Why don't you tell me? And it's your podcast. I can't help it. I'm a podcaster. What's like a couple things? Like what's good and like what do you want? What's in your world right now?
Yeah. So this is what I loved. I loved that you blended this physical, getting yourself into a good space, and then focusing on tuning into what you find inside of there. So for what do I want? What's good in my life first? And celebrating the things that matter is such a critical part of my life. And I talk about it constantly. People hate hearing this because overachievers always want to talk about what they haven't done and their lists, but I'm telling you guys, it'll change your life. What's good? My son has his four best friends downstairs and they're playing. They're making silly putty and they're having an awesome summer. We just got back from an insanely good week vacation. Chicago's had one of the nicest summers I think I can remember. And I had a great conversation about my next book coming out. So there's
cool.
A bunch of cool stuff. And great. What I want, right? That's the next piece of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So I want to take advantage of the last few weeks of summer and before my son goes back to school, just be present and not get ahead of myself. You know, people are like, the summer is over. I'm like, we have 4 weeks left. don't dismiss it before it's gone. And I want to get daily ritual into my life on writing again, because I was writing every day and it's fallen off to the wayside.
Awesome. So that was like an abridged version of the practice.
Yeah. So there you go, guys. Check it out. It's really fun. She walks you through it in it. And what I love about it and some of the stuff that you talk about is connecting to your body, but then reconnecting to your deeper self to find that imagination. How did these parts come together? Why these three factors?
I'm always, basically anything I ever put out in the world is somehow reverse engineered from something I do in my own life. So I'm not one of those do as I say, not as I do people. I'm like, oh my God, I did this thing and it felt so good and it worked.
Yeah.
Maybe you might like it as well. At least give it a try. It's not like this worked for me. It's going to work for you. It's like, hey, try this. Yeah. It might also work for you because we're all so unique and different. And so those are just, I thought of what are the different ways. I also love to synthesize. I don't know. Some people are probably into astrology. Some people probably think it's stupid. I don't care. But I'm a Virgo and I do really identify with being into like productivity and efficiency. Like I love that. And so to me, this was just efficient. It's 9 minutes. Anyone has 9 minutes. It gets me centered. I mean, anyone who does any kind of meditation knows how important the breath is. Everything I do is around movement and sensual movement, connecting and honoring the body, especially because my work is with women primarily. And women, anyone who's ever read any Brené Brown stuff knows that for women, the number one source of shame we face in a variety of ways in our lifetime is our body. So anything I can do to help people have a more loving, compassionate, gentle, enjoyable relationship to their body, I'm always trying to weave that in. And then like we both already said, focusing on what you already have is a great way to bring some good energy into focusing on what you want so that the energy comes from what's already awesome and what I already appreciate instead of, oh my God, this is what's not going well. This.
Right. Not from what's lacking, but coming from an abundant place and adding to the abundance, not feeling like I never have enough, right? And
yeah.
Trapped in that.
And I think our culture is very much like this too. We're kind of set up to do this. We compare ourselves a lot, which makes us feel like we're lacking. Instead of, I kind of always tell people, like, listen, if you're going to compare yourself to like a former version of you. Because I don't care who you are, like you've come a long way. Like if you're still here, you are doing it and you have made some progress.
Okay. You're making me think of something that I haven't talked about before publicly, but I do yoga and I was always thinking when I'm doing my practice of my teacher, because you're watching the teacher when you're in a class and watching their sort of somewhat perfect looking sun salutation. And so then I would sort of in my mind's eye think about myself in terms of her sun salutation. And I had this shift one day where I was like, hey, think about your own sun salutation in comparison to yourself, because right? How do we, do you have any suggestions for how people can get back in touch with comparing and thinking about themselves in terms of that kind of experience? Because there is so much comparison to others and what they're doing, and
yeah,
and you always feel bad.
Yeah. Well, here's what's great. Comparing yourself to others is 1000% useless, because we're all so unique and so different. And I geek out on, I love personality typology. So that's what I like about astrology. I'm really into archetypes. And so whether it's the planets, the houses, the signs, I love all that stuff. I love Myers-Briggs, Enneagram, the business ones, wealth dynamics, human design. Like I tell you, I geek out on these things because I feel like anything that helps me get to know myself better and like my own personal operating system not only helps me to be more discerning in life. So when things are coming up, opportunities come my way, people ask me questions, I'm pretty clear on like what's for me and what's not for me. But it also gives me so much compassion for how different other people are.
Mm.
And especially as like a leader, guide, coach type person and these different roles that I play in my own business and in my body of work, it gives me so much more compassion and so many more ways of seeing the people in sitting in front of me and how, you know what, this approach is probably not going to work for this person. And I'll give you a really great example from recently. I have this yes, no truth practice where I help people to feel into their body for what feels like a yes, what feels like a no, and what feels like the truth to them. Because I had reverse engineered that, it was lacking. And I noticed, you know, after how many people tried this thing, people would be like, I struggle with this. So I received that feedback and I'm like, does it work for some people and not others? And it's because people access their intuition differently. Some people are very like, they get the feelings, they get the like sensations in their body or the goosebumps or can tune into the physical sensations.
Right.
Other people hear things. They might hear a voice, whether it's their own or someone else's. They might be more visual. Like some meditations, have you ever done a guided meditation where it's like a visualization?
Yeah.
Some people are seeing like clear, crisp, like it's a movie.
Yes.
I don't.
Right.
I experience like a sensation of the experience, but I'm not seeing like the vivid details. So to honor and understand that everyone's experience is different helps me as a teacher to put things in context. That's why like that ritual, like you said, we write out the description. There's an audio, there's a video, because people are going to take it in and experience it through the way that they learn or they experience things. So it
yes.
really helps me to connect with people and myself better. So, and also measure progression. So this, I went on a tangent, but to come back to the actual question. So comparing myself to someone else is useless because we're all built so differently.
Yeah. No, I love that answer. I think that's so dead on. And there's a study that suggests, you know, and it's, I always think with neuroscience, they're always learning. So I take this stuff with a bit of a grain of salt, but that 60% of people are visual first and 20 are auditory and 20 are feelings based. And so knowing what you are is such an important thing. If you mainly visualize very clearly, you know, and you're speaking to somebody who is a feelings based person, you might not be speaking the same language, right? Like, so they're exactly. explaining a vision and you're explaining a feeling. If you notice that, then you can try to maybe come together on a common ground more, or say, I see the image that you're painting and it makes me feel excited, or right, like if you blend the conversation.
Totally. And then we don't have to judge each other.
No.
We don't have to think someone's weird. We don't have to think their way is good or bad or right or wrong. We don't have to think that we're inadequate because we do things differently. We could just be like, oh, that's how you're wired. This is how I'm wired. And when we know that, again, we can come together, like you're saying, for richer, more effective communication and even relationships.
Yeah, 100%. So you had a MS in sports medicine, you're working.
we're exaggerating a little bit because I attended one semester of grad school for exercise science. And when I say one semester, I mean 3 months of one semester.
What happened? Not your thing?
It just wasn't. I wanted to shoot myself, literally. I'm sitting in class. And as you could tell, I'm so much of a feeler, like big empath, like very intuitive.
Yeah.
And I just know things all the time and I have no explanation for how I know it. People are like, how? I'm like, don't ask questions. I have no idea. I'm sitting in class, like learning about orthostatic intolerance and why sometimes if people stand up, they get dizzy. And I'm like, shoot me. I don't care. I'm not going to use this. Like, I can't. I felt like I was dying. But I had been a personal trainer and I thought I needed to like get a master's degree to make more money and like maybe I can get a corporate wellness job. And I was like, I'm not going to do it this way.
And when did it move from like the physical to this sort of emotional, spiritual? Was it always a blend for you? What was that process like?
So I started to notice that it came from contrast, as many great realizations do. I started to notice that a lot of my personal training clients were coming to me and we were talking, like I started to feel like a therapist.
Yeah.
And I also was just, I've always felt a responsibility, you know, like I've always, my dad says this, he's like, I think it's our face because, you know, everyone in my family, people just, they tell us things, you know, like very personal things. And so, but they feel safe. It's because they feel safe. You know, they don't feel judged. They know like, you know, we're just going to listen. And so I just started to notice, you know, many of my clients were much older than me, a decade, two, three decades older than me. Cause I was in my 20s when I was a personal trainer. And I was like, huh, there's something to this. So I became much more fascinated by human behavior, psychology, and also like the subtle body, the energetics of things and the emotions than just the physical body. So I had spent so much of my life like working out.
Right.
I became more curious about working in. And then I also see the value in both. So again, back to something I said earlier, I love to synthesize. So where it really hit me was I would have clients for like long-term, months to years.
Yeah.
And they could be doing the right things. They could be eating well, working out, super consistent, getting results. But something in a relationship, something at their job, something with a family member, other things could come up that would so swiftly bump out the physical results. And I was like, what's going on under the hood? Because that's why, you know? So I just got curious about that, started pulling that thread.
Yeah. I mean, it makes a ton of sense, right? Because the physical and emotional all go together. And why do you think so many people are in their heads? And somebody once said it's like floating heads, right? Like people are walking around just like these floating heads, like they have no connection down to their bodies. Why do you think so many of us have like lost connection to our body? And what do you also feel is the value of tuning back into the body? Because you can go to the gym, but not tune into your deeper self, right? Like that is.
This touches on so many amazing things. So I recently had someone go, what do you mean? My body isn't just a head transportation device. But, well, first of all, I think it depends on your upbringing in the sense of what was the education system? What was the family system? Was there a religion? Because like how we relate to our bodies, not to make any of those things wrong, but some of them, the way they treat the body as if it's less than the mind or the intellect, or if it's shameful or it's bad, or especially with women, our bodies are very objectified and sexualized.
Yeah.
So imagining that the body has any value outside of procreation or the pleasure for others is a pretty foreign concept to a lot of people. And we get this messaging from a very young age that it's the physical appearance that makes the biggest difference. So we become very like external oriented when it comes to the body. Unless, and I've talked to a handful of women, but most women I meet and work with, which at this point is like thousands and thousands and thousands, were not raised in a kind of environment where anyone taught them, especially another woman. Like most of us have not had role models of people who embraced their intuition, who trusted their bodies, honored their bodies, treated their bodies as sacred, and didn't just make them wrong. Like even, you know, you're a mom, like you've had a child.
Yeah.
Did you birth your kid through your body?
Yes.
Okay. So for any woman listening who has done that, you understand you've done one of the most mysterious and one of the most magical things like in all of existence, right? Like a human grew in your body.
Right.
You didn't have to like tell it, okay, time to build the liver.
Oh my
okay.
God.
Put little fingernails on the, like the body just knew what to do. Like, it's so unbelievable. It doesn't even make sense. Like, we don't even really think about it sometimes.
I would actually wake up in the morning and I had this little book and it would tell you each day what was happening. And I was like, oh, I'm making, you know, fingernails today.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm driving to work making fingernails. Like, that's the weirdest thing ever. And I was like, you'd think I'd need to focus on something to make a fingernail, right?
No.
Like, I was making eye sockets one day and I'm like, wow, I just do this. And I'm like, I don't even need to like pay attention, right? It's happening outside of me. And so you made a comment though that I want to back up and have you just elaborate on, because I think it's so important that the body isn't just this physical thing and you know, meant for procreation, or you know, it's objectified or just physically to be in shape so it looks good. But you also said to trust the intuition, that it's there for the intuition. A lot of people know what that means intellectually, but I'm not sure they're clear what that means in, an experiential way. What does that mean to you? Because you've worked so much in this space. Like, I just would love for you to talk to it.
Let's do it scientifically and spiritually.
Cool.
So scientifically, like literally our primal biology is that, like, you know, we have a nervous system, our body releases certain hormones, like depending on what's going on, certain areas of our brain, this thing gets triggered. I think it's the amygdala, but don't quote me on that. I'm not great with the details, but I think that is right. That's like the fear center. And so amygdala gets triggered, the body goes into fight or flight, you know, these very natural reactions, and that's a function. That's like the scientific function side of our intuition. Like, we're wired primally to be like, hey, danger.
Yeah.
You know, or there's something going on here, or when you have a funny feeling. And so, and then practically, to put it in context for people, some people might say, I'm not intuitive. We are all intuitive. You all, you know, you've walked into a room and gotten a funky feeling, or you've met someone, like even in our first interview, like you met someone and you clicked and you were like, oh, I love this person's energy.
Yeah.
And so, that's all intuition. That is some kind of seemingly inexplicable knowing or connection or relation that you have, right?
Yeah.
And then for those who are interested in the spiritual context, I believe that our intuition is how the divine, whatever aspect, God, universe, Allah, whatever you believe in or whatever you call it, how it communicates with you. So in my world, I believe that if I'm getting some kind of a hunch, it's really coming from whether it's God or whether it's just like that higher, infinitely intelligent part of myself that doesn't operate from my limited conscious mind or my intellect, an infinite intelligence, if you will. I believe that's what intuition is coming through as well. And the reason why I love relating it to the body so much through the senses is because that's how we get the messages. It can't necessarily speak directly to us, but through learning to speak our body's unique language of the senses, we can interpret how, like, the intuition, like when you meet someone and your stomach churns and you're like, why is my stomach churning when it's this person, right?
Yeah.
And you can begin to observe and you can connect the dots and make observations and go, huh, this is what that seems to mean for me. And then you can actually trust yourself beyond your intellect.
Yep. I love it. And I mean, as an example on the one you're just talking about, right? Your stomach turns when you meet somebody and you have a visceral discomfort. Option one, it's something that you need to heal within yourself, right? Like, why is this person bringing up such a response for me, but other people seem pretty happy with Joe? Or it's sort of this universal discomfort. A lot of people get around him and have this discomfort, and it's that kind of primal, there's something that feels off in the room. And, yeah. You know, untangling all that and listening to it, it's so subtle, right? It's like the mind is always chattering away. This is happening on such a deep and quiet level that
yes.
If you don't take the time, that's why I like your 9-minute ritual. If you don't take the time to keep checking back in with your body, you can miss a lot of this. Wouldn't you say?
Big time, because you have to observe yourself. It kind of goes back to what we were saying earlier about knowing yourself. Mm-hmm. And because here's the other thing, it's not always, sometimes it's like a trigger and it is something that's in you. And sometimes it's just that higher intelligence mm-hmm. discerning. So, because there's a difference between judgment and discernment, mm-hmm. right? Judgment is what happens in the mind. It's the evaluation. It's the comparison. It's the critiquing. It's the placing things, this is better than, this is worse than. It's making things right or wrong, good or bad. Discernment is just a yes or no. Right. And the body doesn't judge. Mind judges. Body only discerns. So everyone else might be okay with Joe, but something in me is going, not for me. You don't need to analyze it. You don't need to farm it back up to the mind and go, well, why? Everybody else likes Joe. What's my problem? You just go, okay, no Joe for me.
Right. And maybe no Joe for me this year, right? Like maybe, right. You know, I make all my business decisions this way now, and it never fails. If you really like trust that space and you just say, you know what, if it's saying yes, then I'm saying yes, and I'm not going to overanalyze it. You need to analyze the details around things, like how to get it done on a practical level. But the yes, no has to come from that deep space. Yeah.
And by the way, I'm not advocating to abandon all critical thinking, because I think that's when we get into the realm of spiritual bypass. Mm. And that's when people are giving way too much gravity to feelings and emotions, which are not always intuition.
Love that you said that, because this is a big, big passion point of mine. It's not just, right, like I feel something, and so I always follow my feelings. What's the difference? Can you explain that?
Yeah. And so I remember, and I've even said this, this is one of those things. I know Wayne Dyer has said this, Caroline Meiss has said this, and Neil Strauss have all said this in their own way that I've heard, where it's like, essentially, if you're not a little embarrassed by something you've written or said 5 years ago, you're not growing. And I know I've written somewhere on the internet at some point in the last decade that feelings are facts. Mm. And I want to just say that feelings, I believe, are valid. All of your feelings are valid. I don't want to deny that you feel a certain thing that you feel, but it's not a fact. If I feel offended, it doesn't mean that the thing the person said was offensive. Correct. It means I took offense to that for whatever reason, right?
Yeah.
And so we have to back it up a little bit and understand where feelings and emotions come from. So again, and context. So for me, feelings, sensations, are wrapped up in feelings. For me, when I say emotions, so an emotional response to something is triggered by a thought.
Yes.
That's how that works. Yes. The thought happens first, the emotion happens after. Like an emotion doesn't happen without a thought.
Correct. Yep.
Whether you're aware of it or not.
Right. Because we can move really quickly.
Big time.
Notice the thought, but that's just also our brains process an insane amount of information without our awareness.
Insane amount of information. And also there's conscious and unconscious. So it could be programming at play, not necessarily a conscious thing that you think.
Yep.
So, cause like we're so complex, right? So the difference is a thought is maybe it's true or false, but an intuition is really, it's like a deep knowing. Mm.
And we know when we know, right? Like I really do.
But we're just not really taught to trust that and accept it. Mostly, and this is mostly a result of a traditional education system where we're taught to like get the answers right, and there's a specific way to get to the answer.
Right.
And so left brain, logic, rationale, follow the formula, do it this way. We spend however many years in school basically learning that, unless for some reason, like you went on like an artistic or a creative path and you did develop. So it's not that we don't need the left brain. It's that for many of us, the right brain, because it's not honored as much.
Yeah.
And right brain is more like the creative, intuitive, that kind of side, the sensitive side. we're all just, a lot of us are really out of balance. Like there's a developmental mismatch.
Yeah. And kids like nail this. I mean, we were all born able to do it. They, you know, they will tell you how they feel about something in 20 seconds. So did you have like a, I couldn't, like I was researching to get ready for our podcast as I always do, but when I was looking at your stuff and your site, I just, all of a sudden I took like a 10,000 foot look down and I was like, the words of, you know, break free, untamed, intuition, trust self. Like, it's like there's a breakout, your wild soul. Like was this because you had a breakout moment, or is that just how you envision all of this? Like, tell me, what is all that? What is all the break free stuff about for you?
So, you know, as a kid, and again, as you noted, all children are this way in their own right. So when I use words like wild and untamed, I always like to distinguish for people. Essentially, I'm inviting everyone to come home to their true nature. So what is my true nature is not your true nature. You know, like it doesn't mean barefoot screaming in the woods or going to ecstatic dance or whatever. For some people, their wild nature is that they are a mega introvert and they just want to be home reading a book.
Yeah.
And so instead of forcing themselves to go to a party they don't want to go to, they stay home and they enjoy the hell out of just reading that book. You know, that might be wild to someone to say no, to not go force themselves to do something they don't want to do. And so there's many, many expressions of this. It's about the freedom to be who you really are. And so I grew up that way, really, like just being myself, speaking my mind. And it wasn't really until I started getting into more career time. So like late teens into my early 20s, when I realized, when I became conscious of the different ways I would be told I was too much, or I would dial myself down, or people would tell me I was intimidating, because confidence is intimidating to those who don't have it.
Mm.
And we
as
do
a woman,
live,
right? It's even more challenging to be very confident.
Our culture says we want you to be empowered. We want you to feel good about yourself, but they get really uncomfortable when we actually do.
And women do too. I hate to like, we always bust out the men, but women have a hard time with confident women in early years.
Yeah. And again, it's not like, it doesn't even, the gender doesn't matter. It's just like humans are, you know, we have all of our own insecurities. And whenever we're faced with someone who doesn't have that insecurity and in fact is shining in a way that we long to be shining, it's simply going to highlight that we're not.
That's right. And so either join, which would take a massive jump of courage, or judge, right?
Yeah. Right. And we're, again, we develop judgment. Like that's part of who we are. You know, there's a lot of spiritual teachings. It's like to try to be like non-judgmental. And I'm like, for me, I'm like, listen, we're kind of wired that way. And so this is why I love the work of Byron Katie, because it's like, you're going to judge, you know, like, unless you're here, you're like Bodhisattva, Dalai Lama, like ascended enlightened master status. Right. You're going to judge some people sometimes.
Right.
It's just a matter of, what do you do with it when it happens? Can you get some awareness around that you're doing it? And can you pause and have the discipline and enough compassion to like, not really act on it, not do much with it, not think that it's right or true. And just like, you know,
yeah, totally.
Not be a jerk.
Well, it's like there's people who want to be an Olympic athlete, and there's, I know this guy who runs ultra marathons. That's nice for him. But for most of us, we just want to be in shape to some degree. So it's like, you're going to eat the pie. Note that you're going to eat it, but don't eat like 5 pies in a week, maybe. Right. Like, just dial it back a little. Right. So is that sort of what you're saying? Just like, we're going to judge, we're going to have our bad days, but you know, you have a choice once you get into that place.
Yeah. Like, don't beat yourself up about it. Be like, oh, you know, sometimes you got to eat some pie and then move on with your life. You don't need to spend, you know, my friend Rochelle was the first person I heard say this. And it's like using animals as inspiration for this, you know, like when a gazelle gets chased by a lion and then, you know, gets off to the side, the gazelle literally shakes it off. Like in my movement practice, I shake personally, me also, like every day, I like shake my body out at various points of the day. The gazelle does not then go into therapy for 10 years, which, by the way, nothing against people who've been in therapy for 10 years, but the gazelle does not go into therapy and talk about that one time they were chased by the lion. They shake it out. They move on.
And by the way, kids too. They're like, one kid will throw a block, hit the kid in the head. They're sobbing. They're crying. They hate each other. And like 20 minutes later, they're playing blocks again. right?
They're fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. They move through things and they let them go. I think as we become adults, we attach mm-hmm. and we make meaning and we won't let go and we want to be stubborn and we need to be right and we cling. So a lot of the freedom, to go back to your question, liberating myself from all those attachments, from believing other people's opinions to be true, from putting more weight and value in what the external world was reflecting back to me than my own inner reflection and knowing and truth.
I love it. I love it. So walk us through, you have this wild soul movement. Walk us through a little bit about what this is. Like what, I went on the Lady of Sanctuary website. You've got all these classes, surrender and release, let go of what no longer serves you, balance, the arts of giving and receiving. Where did this program come from? What can people expect if they jump into it? It sounds so cool.
Yeah. So there's I don't love the word formulas and frameworks, so I'll call it a path. So like the wild soul path to ... It could be reclaiming and redefining womanhood for the 21st century. It could be trusting yourself. It could be self-love, personal empowerment, embodiment, you know, whatever you want. There's these four topics. The first one is surrender and release, because, you know, when we hear the term surrender, and there's like great books, like if anyone's read any Michael Singer, like Surrender Experiment, it's really, sometimes people hear the word surrender and they get all caught up in, well, I don't want to give up. I don't want to be a quitter. It's not about that. It's mm-hmm. about getting out of your own way. Mm-hmm. Surrender is about releasing or at least loosening your grip on the need to control or know everything, or for the outcomes of things to be the exact way you want them to be, you think they should be, or they need to go. Mm-hmm. Loosening the grip on our preferences so that we could be available for like some miracles, or maybe mm-hmm. for some things to knock our socks off or go beyond our wildest dreams or expectations. So that's mm-hmm. what I mean when I talk about surrender. Release is also like,
and by the way, I feel like we just have to put a big amen at the end of that one. <It's> like, really, amen. Because it's like we white knuckle so strongly because we've, you know, maybe you've done like your vision board and all crazy things and you think it should be, and you're going to get, I thought I would need it to live in this one house. I was like, this is the house for me. And I'd like found vision board and all that stuff. And it's like, you're out of your fucking mind. The house of my dreams was not that one. It was like, that was just creating the concept, right? But you have to surrender and open and let go a little to actually get what you fully need. You can't fully visualize it down to the details, right?
Yeah, because then what you're doing, and this, well, I'll get to this when we go to the wild dreaming and desire one, but you're just limiting. It's limited.
Yep.
So, and release. So surrender and release go together, because surrender is about like opening yourself up, loosening your grip. But release also entails letting go of very specific things that keep you where you are, that keep you stuck, whether that's belief systems, needs to be right. We talked about attachments already. And part of release sometimes is forgiveness work. And just like surrender, forgiveness is a word that some people get really triggered by because they think it's about letting people off the hook for crappy things that they've done.
Yeah.
And it's not that. It's actually just taking back your own power from situations or people or things that have happened in the past and not continuing to pull that forward into the now or into the future. So you're not saying, you're not letting anyone off the hook, but you're saying, I'm no longer willing to give so much power, energy, attention, emotional charge. You know, like, let me just take that back. I need my own life force. So that's surrender and release. Clears up some space so that we can begin to trust more and be more receptive. Because so much of what blocks us from being able to trust ourselves and life and being receptive is because we have some real stuff to let go of and we need to get out of our own ways. And then is like the wild dreaming and desire part. And they kind of go, you can see how they build on each other. Because if I can surrender and release, if I can let some stuff go, if I'm not so attached, if I'm not trying to control anything, if I can trust myself and I trust that, like, I call it like the Rumi effect. There's that Rumi quote, what you seek is seeking you. Uh-huh. It's like, if I want something, it also wants me. So it's not just me slugging along, trying to get all the way from point A to point Z. Like, it's at point Z and it wants to meet me somewhere in the middle of the alphabet, like LMNOP. I don't know. So if that metaphor works, sometimes my metaphors are great. Sometimes they're like, I kind of worked.
I'm right there with you. No, I love this. I know everybody listening is like, this is awesome. This is dead on. Everything great. You're saying, I love it.
And so when we have these desires, I believe like our desires are holy. It's like, I believe the desires are intuitive, right? It's connected to that like deep inner truth. So it's not just something I want because consciously in my mind, I'm comparing myself or I'm looking at the Joneses or what other people have. And I think I need to have that too if I'm going to be worthy or whatever. It's like literally something in my soul is like, oh, I must do that thing or I must visit that place or I must meet this person or I don't know why, but I need to at least explore this. And sometimes our desires lead us down a path that's not even the full path we need to follow all the way through, but just takes us to the point where we can pivot into where we really need to go.
And that's why trust is so important before you get there, because if you cannot trust yourself to follow with that, I love the way you did that moment, right? Like because that's how it comes in this little tiny, like silent, like, yes, this is it. But if you can't trust it, that's it, right? Like you'll start rationalizing once again and justifying to go a different direction.
And then here's what's cool. Here's where we use the mind to be awesome. When we connect with those desires and we trust them, then farm it up to your intellect and use your imagination. Mm-hmm. Start to build it out. Start to ask what if questions that are possibility oriented, not like disaster oriented, right? Which is what a lot of people, what if this happens? What if this? Okay. But what if this happens, right? What if it's better than I possibly could have imagined? What if it can happen sooner? This happened to me recently because I wanted to move to Malibu. My lease isn't actually up until September 30th, but I started looking at places anyway because I wanted to know what was on the market. And on August 3rd or July, I don't know. It was like a week or two ago at the time we're recording this. It popped up like it was July 30th. I'm looking at a calendar now. This place popped up and I was like, oh, that's the one. I texted the real estate person. 2 days later, I drove up to Malibu to see it. And I was like, doesn't make any sense, but this is my place. I signed the lease. I'm still on this lease. Like, it doesn't make any logical sense, but I'll tell you right now, whether it's a month from now, a year, 2 years, we're going to look back and look at all the reasons why this was an amazing move. And so I let my imagination go, what if it could be sooner?
Yep. Yep. Well, that's the thing. What you just said is so important. And anybody listening, like you're thinking about the lease, you find something, it doesn't make quote logical sense, but the logical sense came from you having formulated a full belief system before. And now this is presenting itself. So what's to say that it's not logical, right? Maybe you just have to make it work around. Now you just have to make it work, right? Like,
yeah. Well, I'll say this. I don't know that I think it's logical, but I do think it's aligned with my values and my beliefs.
Right. Which this is what I take issue with the idea of logic, right? Like, isn't that the whole point of life is you have the thing that you want, you align it with your beliefs. And obviously we don't want to do things that put us into debt. I don't want to do anything that harms other people, right? There's a limit to it.
Yeah.
But we take this like, idea of logic so seriously, like it has to be so buttoned up and it's just stifling in the end, right?
Totally. And again, we miss out because it's like living life with blinders on or living life with like the brunch menu only instead of like realizing there's a whole full menu here. I don't have to order brunch.
Right. Right. Cause this is logical. If I did my master's in math, then I must continue an entire career, but I hate math.
Oh, right? Yeah. And people torture themselves, right?
Torture.
Someone goes to medical school. I mean, how many years and how many hundreds of thousands of dollars is that? And then they get into it and they realize they hate being a doctor.
Right.
And they show up and they force. I really don't think any of us are here to force ourselves to do things we don't want to be doing. And I'm not saying that from like an entitled place, but there needs to be some satisfaction. And so, you know, and this is a conversation we have in my community a lot, which is like in terms of purpose, maybe you do. Maybe you go to a job just for a paycheck and that paycheck is what allows you to fulfill your purpose in other ways. I don't think your career and your vocation have to be the expression of your purpose, but allow yourself to at least engage on some level with some frequency in your life in the things that really feel so true and so satisfying and so nourishing to you. And that's why the last part of the path is love and creation, because we're all creators. Like we're powerful creators. We're creating things all the time, whether we're creating great things, creating not great things, we create all kinds of things. And so if the energy that we could be creating from is love rather than fear, which is we create a lot from fear when we don't know any better,
yeah,
it really not only impacts us in our own life, but that has a massive ripple effect on the world around us in either direction. If you're creating from fear, you're contributing to collective fear. If you're creating from love, you're contributing to collectively spreading more love.
I love it. You guys, if you want to check it out again, I'll have the link, but you can find all of her work on the Wild Soul Movement. So if you, I ask everybody who comes on the show, I want to ask you as well, if you could talk to us a little bit, what do you think an authentic life then means? If you were to think about that idea, it's been so butchered in social media that it, you know, I go on Instagram and I'm just authentic. And so I'm going to speak my truth all the time because these glasses are authentic and whatever it is. But I think it's such a deeply complicated question. And a lot of your work comes around this concept and core knowledge of who you are and authenticity. So what does that mean to you?
Yeah, it's just being true to yourself in any moment, which often means like you're a dynamic being. So reserve the right to change your mind. Don't even put yourself in the own boxes you might have built for yourself. So break out of like the figurative box of like culture and society. Know who you are, and then, you know, really be willing to like have some values, have some standards, stand for yourself, like speak up, have some boundaries, you know, like if people are, we teach people how to treat us. So if you're tolerating things, tolerance is a real inauthentic way of being. If we're tolerating things that are not okay with us, I'm not talking about the good kind of tolerance, because there's a difference. Like there's compassion and there's tolerance. I have tons of compassion for tons of people. I don't judge the way people live their lives. I have no idea what someone's path is, why they're here, why they're doing what they're doing. Doesn't mean I have to tolerate it. Doesn't mean I have to accept poor treatment, poor behavior, or lower my standards because someone's, quote, doing their best. Listen, your best sucks sometimes.
Totally.
And again, I don't have to knock it. I'm not saying like, I know you're trying, but it doesn't mean that I have to be okay with what is not up to par for me.
That's right.
And so it's not just, authenticity is not just about self-expression. It's about how you show up in the world.
I love it. And what, I ask people their daily rituals. I mean, you obviously have a list. Could you share though, are there a couple of things that are just a must every day for you?
Yeah. So before I even get out of bed or do anything, like I love prayer. I love meditation. The two kind of are intertwined for me. And so there's some variation of this prayer that I say every day. First of all, it's just like, thank you, thank you, thank you. And I acknowledge like I connect to the divine. Like I believe in like a mother and a father God. So that's typically who I'm talking to. And it's like, thank you, thank you, thank you for the great blessings. Like I'm always acknowledging, like that's literally when I wake up in the morning, my first thought is like, oh, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Like I look around my house, I look around my room, like I feel like, all right, I'm still living. I can see things. I have this body. Thank you. And then my prayer is always like, use me, move me, make me a force for expansion, for love, and for good. Like my goal, there's this Irma Bombeck quote that I've loved for years now, says something along the lines of, at the end of my life, I want to stand before God and be able to say, I used everything you gave me.
Ooh, I love that.
And like, that's like, I just want to be used up, all the potential, all the talent, like everything I came in with, everything I was put on this planet to do. I want to do all of it. I want to be all of it. And like, you know, and there's all kinds of like pain attached to that challenge. Sure. Miracles, blessings, bliss. Great. I want all of it. I want to like live fully. So that's what I'm grounding into in the morning. So whether that's like shaking my body, if I wake up and I feel funky, what can I do to not feel funky going into my day?
Yeah.
So there's energetic practices. Maybe I'm cutting my cords, lighting candles. I'm not a practicing Catholic anymore, but something I have retained from Catholicism that I love is I'll say prayers for specific things, and I have my own altar in my room and I light candles. I love that. Just feels so sacred to me, and a way to like pay my respects and like ask for something or acknowledge, like, you know, when people say like sending thoughts and prayers, that's like, that's how I do that. Or sometimes I imagine literally like a Care Bear stare. I'm like blasting people with love. Like, you know,
I love it.
That's my way. I do like, that's usually what my mornings look like. And sometimes I'll just go, I choose to live by the beach because that is the part of nature that helps me feel most connected to myself. And so sometimes I'll just go to the beach, not even to go in the water, but just to sit there and like feel the breeze and smell the water and put my toes in the sand. So those are a variety of the things I do, but the staple always is like the thank you and the use me, move me prayer.
I love it. I love it. Thank you. Thank you for coming on the show. This was amazing. So much great information. If people want to check you out, where can they find you?
So I have two different websites, but go to wildsoulmovement.com. You can navigate your way to the other one from there. The podcast is all listed under there and stuff. And I'm on social media. So if you type in Elizabeth D'Alto, you'll find me on Facebook, Instagram, all the places. So
you got some live YouTube videos going, all sorts of things. Elizabeth, amazing. Awesome. I love, this is our second hour. So much fun. I appreciate you coming on and sharing all of your thoughts with our audience.
Thanks for having me.